Chinbaz, you make some big claims for pornography's role in driving technological change. Most people would know about the key role of the defence industry, for example, in many new technologies. But you say that we can thank the porn industry for even such everyday conveniences as secure online shopping. What role did it play there?
Well, that's a very interesting case where, in fact, when we're talking about the Internet, it was the military, the American military, who first developed the early Internet, and it spread from there to universities. But the Internet as we know it, as a commercialized entity, that was really driven by the pornography industry. It was actually the pornography industry that developed a lot of the actual e-commerce technology itself. Essentially what happened was there were a lot of people who were scrambling to figure out how to make money selling content online. A lot of people forget how bad the technology was at the time. Even when the old computers and the old modems worked, they were slow, they crashed, they dropped calls and that sort of thing. People were very uneasy about using a credit card online, things like that. And for some very basic reasons of convenience and anonymity, the people who were really willing to make the investment in making that technology go were the people who wanted to buy and consume pornography in a more anonymous and private way.
And the development of the video industry, why was pornography such a driver there? Was that also that issue of anonymity?
Well, it was a sort of a related issue of marginalization as well. So in the 1970s, people who watched pornography, if they wanted to watch a pornographic movie at the time, they also had to go out to a cinema. But very often that cinema was in a bad part of town. They were surrounded by other people. They were in danger of being spotted by someone they didn't want to be spotted by. So when this new technology came along, and again, the VCR was not a pretty piece of technology. It was expensive and it was clunky and the tapes were really undependable. But for that group, they on the consumer side, they thought, I can watch a movie by myself in my home. It's much more private. And the people who were running those adult cinemas were thinking, I can sell these much more discreetly, and I don't have to deal with legal challenges and community backlash. So it was good for the producers and distributors as well as for the consumers.
Would you go so far as to say that Google owes its success to pornography?
I would say that Google owes a huge debt to pornography, and actually Google owes a debt in many different ways, everything from the bandwidth of the Internet, the high-speed Internet that we enjoy today that was driven by a demand for pornography, and then a lot of Google's advertising revenue actually still today comes from pornography advertising.
So if pornography is so important, why don't we generally acknowledge it or even sometimes know about it?
Well, in some ways, it's not really a puzzle. In some ways, it's a subject that people have very strong feelings about. And a lot of people have a great deal of difficulty talking about it, and especially talking about it in a way that's kind of complicated, where, you know, when I was researching this, I didn't want to ignore some of the real issues of pornography, things like exploitation and sexism and violence that are realities of the pornography industry, whatever else you can say about it. But those things can be true, and it can also be true that the industry has had an influence on advances in technology. But having that kind of complex conversation is off-putting for some people. So very often what happens is when a technology is driven in its early stages by pornography, when it matures and when it's ready for the mainstream, at that point its pornographic origins are basically scrubbed from the story so that the people who use the technology in the mainstream can enjoy it without having to think about the fact that it owes some debt to the pornography industry early in its development.
You go right back to the cave paintings to show how we've sort of airbrushed pornography out of history. Does it surprise you that that embarrassment seems to persist despite our relatively permissive culture, at least in the West today?
You know, it does. And it doesn't, actually. It does in the sense, especially when I was looking at some of the earlier forms, when I was going back to Paleolithic sculpture and cave drawings and on through the ancient Romans and Greeks and Japanese and Chinese ancient art forms as well that are full of these sexual images. I'm kind of surprised in the world of academia that there's still a discomfort of recognizing the powerful influence that sexual content had. But in some ways, though, it does come back. A lot of people who I spoke to in the pornography industry itself and others suggested that there was a sort of hypocrisy about people's discomfort about talking about it. But I think for many people, that lack of comfortability is not that surprising. I think it is a subject that people honestly sometimes just don't like thinking about or talking about.
Well, you acknowledge that it's an industry that can be violent and exploitative. Does that make you uncomfortable?
It is certainly something that I had to grapple with at various points when I was researching, when I was interviewing. I interviewed a lot of people, and some were academics and some are people who work in the pornography industry. And it was a pretty broad range of people, but every so often I would be talking to someone though it wasn't what I was asking about, there would be attitudes that would come out about how they feel about women or violence or some aspects of pornography that were very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable for me as a journalist. Those were both difficult things to research, and then I struggled a lot with how to portray those things in the book as well. I didn't want to pretend they didn't exist, but I also didn't want to distract too much from where my focus was with the specific relationship to technology.
What does that say? You seem to be suggesting that sex sells, essentially, and that that's part of what drives the communications technologies.
Yes, that's right. I mean, especially in the past 50 years or so, for the VCR with cable television, with and of course the internet, there's a huge economic powerhouse in the pornography industry that has basically determined the success or failure of a lot of different technologies. There is more to it than that as well, though, because this influence can be seen in the days before there was a pornography industry as we know it today. You can see it with those earlier art forms, where it was still a tremendously powerful driver of creativity in the tools we used to communicate with each other, even before there was an economic element at play.
Interestingly, the invention of the printing press was not, at least initially, the boon for pornography that today we might expect. Why wasn't it?
Well, that's kind of a very interesting juncture in the history of communications, and that's really the invention of mass communications. So before that, erotica was abundant in the art and the literature of each era, but it was only the purview of the extreme elites. Those were the only people who had the education and the money to possess those things. The printing press opened the door to a real mass production of things. And of course, when people think about the Gutenberg press, they think about the Gutenberg Bible, which was the thing that made its owner, Johannes Gutenberg, a wealthy man. But there were a lot of salacious things that also rolled off printing presses at the same time. But really, that was a time of transition where people were still figuring out this new medium. I'm not sure exactly why it took a while before pornography really became a driving force in the world of print. I mean, it ultimately did, but it took quite a while. But, I don't really have an explanation of why it wasn't as immediate with some other media. Perhaps it was just because people were figuring out what mass communications was.
Would it be fair to say that pornography has been more a driver of technologies that have allowed for a more private and personal version of communication, like the internet, than mass communication?
I would think that is correct, especially, again, that's certainly been the prevailing trend for the past 50 years, where the technologies that have really been influenced by the pornography industry, the VCR, cable television, and the internet, each one was a progression toward a way both to buy pornography more anonymously and to watch it in a more solitary fashion.
Now, you make the claim that if we study pornography, we'll see where communication technologies are heading. So what does today's pornography, which is often extreme and violent, what does it tell us about the future of communications?
Well, it tells us that there are going to be new technologies that, in all likelihood, mainstream audiences are not going to be ready for. There will be new technologies that will make people feel uncomfortable, or they're just unfamiliar, or, as happened with lots of other technologies, they'll just be hard to use. And those technologies, if they are going to survive, in all likelihood, it'll be, once again, the pornography industry who become the early adopters, who figure out how to make money from those, how to create a market of users for those technologies, and keep them alive long enough for them to improve to the point where they're ready for the mainstream. Now, it is, as you say, it's a little bit scary because it is an industry that makes many, many people very uncomfortable. And some of the technologies that may well be coming down the pipe make people feel very uncomfortable. Again, it's that complex thing where all of that is true, and yet, in all likelihood, there will be revolutions in communications technology that ultimately benefit people who have no interest in that world whatsoever.
Is there any example that you can think of that might be coming to us sometime in the next decade or so?
Well, I'm always hesitant to say this in particular is going to be the next big thing. But here's an example of something that might be, and it's a really good example of where the pornography industry may still or is already experimenting and throwing its weight around. And that's the idea of so-called haptic technologies. So what that means is most of the technologies that we think of today, they communicate either sound or visuals or both. But haptic technologies communicate a sense of touch. So rather than just my words going across to the continent, a handshake or heat or motion or texture are communicated. And this is something that it's a little bit more invasive for most people. It's a different kind of sensory communication than sight and sound. But right now, the pornography industry is experimenting with this in a field, I hope it's okay to use this word, in a field called teledildonics. So essentially communicating physical sexual communication via the internet using actual devices with heaters and motors and movers and that sort of thing.
You're doing well for our radio audience, thank you.
So I will leave that description there, and I'm sure even that is enough to make some people feel very uncomfortable. But the thing about it is, if you think about where that technology might go when it does mature, it could lead to being able to conduct surgery remotely using tactile feedback or being able to test the ripeness of vegetables if you can't actually make it out to the grocery store, or to test drive a car and get the actual tactile feedback of what it feels like to be driving a car without ever leaving your couch. So that's a little bit pie in the sky, and it's not something that I'm saying will definitely be the next big thing. But it is technologies like that where they're uncomfortable making now, which means there's resistance to them, which creates a demand for early adopters, where the pornography industry can step in and say, we're going to work with this and make it work. And after we've been doing it for 10 or 15 years, however long it is, the mainstream's going to realize, actually, there's a market here for us as well, and the cycle will continue.
And I wonder if the mainstream will this time acknowledge its debt to the pornography industry.
Well, you know, I've got to say that you can never be sure, but my prediction is that it happens often enough. My prediction is that ultimately the pornographic origins will be scrubbed from the history again. There seems to be a remarkable capacity for repeatedly doing that with technology after technology.
Pachin Vaz, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.